Aloha, and welcome to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. In each episode, we talk with some of Hawaii's most influential business, nonprofit, and cultural leaders, and ask them about the important issues facing Hawaii and its people. We'll also learn a bit about each fascinating guest and have some fun along the way. Now, the host of the Hawaii Business Podcast, Anyang Nakata.
Today's episode is presented by Toyota Hawaii. Discover their impressive electrified lineup of vehicles, including hybrid, plug-in hybrid, battery electric, and fuel cell options. Find the right vehicle for your lifestyle at toyotahawaii.com/electrified. Welcome, everybody. I'm so pleased to have with me today for another episode of the Hawaii Business Podcast, Kuha'o Zane, Chief Operating Officer and Creative Director at Sig Zane Designs. Hello.
Aloha. Thank you for having me.
I wonder what aloha shirt you're wearing.
Today, this is called Nahui Hui, and it's meant to look like constellations or stars in the sky.
Oh, I love the color. It's like a peach, salmon, blossom, all that jazz.
Definitely salmon. I'd say that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I love that you cuff the sleeves. Very like 80s, 90s kid. Yes.
Accurate.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Okay, so pronouncing your name is very important to me. I love your name, and I'm going to give it a go in saying your full name because it means rain from clear sky. And I'm super cheesy, and that's such a big metaphor to me about, you know, researching your career and how you've taken, you know, your father's business to the next level, all those things. Okay, so you ready?
Let's see.
Kuha'o I Maikalani Zane.
That was better than any elementary teacher I had.
Oh, yes. 1 point for me. Okay. And also, before we get started, you have a baby on the way.
Yes, I do. Very shortly, any day now.
Oh, my goodness.
It's exciting and a little nerve-wracking, but
yes,
we're there. We're
yes,
there.
You should be nerve-wracked. Yes. But anything you're afraid of, we're always told, we're just run towards it.
I like that advice. I'm going to take that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So your baby's about to be born, but you were born in, when you were born, I don't want to age people, although you and I are part of the best generation.
Right.
The Gen X. So when you were born, you told me when we talked story prior, you're born and a few years later, your parents were like, okay, guess we need more money. So let's found this business, which is so kind of interesting and amazing. And so I want to ask you, now that you're about to have a parent, of course you and your girlfriend already have a child, a daughter, right? Yep. She's 10.
Loli.
But you're about to have your first son, right? So have you been thinking about what's went through your parents' mind and hearts back then?
I definitely have been thinking about that. And that's so funny that you say that. I actually have a few pictures that I was going through last night. It's an old box that I'm just clearing out of one room so we can have a baby room. But I was going through those pictures and I actually saw some of the pictures of my mom when she was Hawaii back then. And so when she was pregnant back then. And so just kind of like trying to think where they were at that time period. And then also thinking, wait a minute, I'm way busier than they were at that time. I need to figure out how to slow down so I can enjoy and be in the moment during this time.
They needed to ramp up.
Exactly, exactly. I'm like, oh, I need to pull back a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good point, though. Yeah. And I love that you're being proactive about it. Okay, so there's so much to talk about. Obviously, your parents, your lineage, your hula, obviously the business. But I wondered if we might start with something that one of the topics du jour that I see, and it's regenerative tourism. So I understand that, you know, big picture wise, it's basically the idea that Hawaii and Hawaii's culture has been commodified. But so it is what it is. Going forward, let's reset and let's reinvest, protect, and enhance the Hawaiian culture, knowledge, assets, but most importantly, the people and the land, right? And under this kind of big umbrella of malama, which is, I understand, it loosely means to care for.
Sure.
So tell me what your thoughts are about that. And because to me, Sig Zane Designs and what you and your family represent, to me, that is a pillar of what I hope everyone can kind of get sticky about what regenerative tourism means.
Okay. And that's like perfect timing because of the fact that we're at the precipice of this changeover in tourism at HTA, as well as with the changeover of some of the marketing that's happening at HTA. So I'll say, maybe I'll just reel it back a little bit. Growing up in hula and just having this eight generation hula practice that's not only the motions and choreography of hula, but also the learning of these crafts and these lei making and the associated arts around hula, and then also some of the ceremonies and protocol. Learning all of that and then going out and traveling, you know, we've been to Japan multiple times, we've been to Bali, we've been to all over the mainland, and at the furthest point, one time we got to go to, I think it's 2004, when the Olympics were happening back in Greece. We got to go in 2003 and do kind of like this specialty indigenous blessing of
Greece. Oh, that's
Greece.
Really neat.
Yeah, of Greece.
And then just Greece of all places too, right?
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. As it was returning to Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to do this blessing of sorts where they invited these different indigenous groups from all over the world. Anyway, we're in Olympia, like literally the home of the Olympics where it all started, and we're at this outdoor amphitheater and we are performing alongside with Maori, with Native Americans, even with some of the Aborigines from Australia. And as we're about to go up to stage, the Aborigines were up there and they had like such a fiery performance. They were very energetic, very vocal, and they just had this like this charisma to their performance that all of us as hula dancers, who we feel we have a very fiery performance too, we were like, all right, we got to go out there, we got to show up too. Anyway, we go out there and we perform our hula set, our Pele set, which is specifically our fiery dances that is tied to the goddess Pele, of course. But these chants and these dances have been passed on for generations within our family. So we go out and we do this set, and we're somewhat known for this set, and so we perform the set. As soon as we're done, we're just about getting off stage, and like literally in the crowd, you could hear like a pin drop.
Yeah.
They were silent, like nobody is, and like maybe like a couple claps here and there.
Okay.
And then I'm not going to lie, maybe it was a little ego hurt, but I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Like these other guys just killed it, and Right. Everybody was like, yeah. And then we went on and not one person applauded. And so we went into the back and I was just talking to one of the tour guides that we had. I was like, hey, what happened just
right,
there?
Right.
And she basically came and she told me, she's like, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. Let me go outside and talk. And they brought a few people in the back to talk to us. And the first question they asked us was, where are you from? I was like, huh? I don't understand. And so I said, Hawaii. And they're like, no. And as I was talking to them, I realized my epiphany that I had was whatever that has been marketed to them on a larger scale out there in Greece is not what this generational practice of Hawaii that we have.
Wow.
And so there's a large gap or delta or disconnect between the two. And so this was back in 2003 now, almost 20 years later. And I think for me now, I'm starting to think, how do we close this gap? How do we portray what we have, which is integral to our family, and how do we portray that out to the world so that that disconnect can actually be connected, so that that right amount of education about what is integral to Hawaii can actually be out there in the audience or for the audience out there?
Yeah.
And that was like one of the first times that I realized that there was such a disconnect, but that was also a very motivational period for me. So getting all the way back to regenerative tourism, I think, one, we definitely need to look at it on an environmental level and what are the metrics that are capable for our land to hold. And there are a few, I mean, I'm sure we all go to beaches that we all feel are extra crowded. And when we have to think about the capacity of that beach, what are those numbers and who dictates those numbers? And I think that that's the process of regenerative tourism currently right now. How do we create these metrics? And how do we ask the right questions and also ask the right people to have these metrics relative to that aina or to that space that they're in at the time? That's the first part.
Yeah, I love that you shared that story. Thank you. Because I think what's important is if we want everyone to understand and buy in, which is going to take time, we need to tell more stories that people can really grab onto. And the story that you told is so clear, although I wasn't there, it's so clear about the delta and the opportunity we have, because it's really perspective, right? Yep. We can either be negative or we can say, okay, so we have an opportunity, which is, I think, the attitude you took. Because it's not about Mai Tais with the umbrella and the grass skirt.
Although they're nice.
I love me some alcohol. Rum, baby. Okay. But it's not, it was such a sticky story that you just told about that opportunity that we have to bridge that gap, but also do it in the right way and then balance industry and culture. And I wonder if with everything going on, right, that it's the right time, the generations coming up, the younger generations, they're more aware, they want to invest and put their dollars where they can also feel good. And I will share with you that some people, because there's always going to be two camps or three camps or five camps. And so there's some people that feel like, oh my goodness, the pendulum's going to swing too far left and there's not going to be balance, and like, how, you know, tourism's our number one, or we want it to be number two, number three, but tourism is still our number one industry. How is this going to work? It's going to be a takeover. There are those voices that are happening.
Definitely.
But to me, humbly, your business to me is a representation. And if we can tell more stories like that, your Zigzane Designs and your Path Forward is a wonderful example of that balance is possible. Industry, culture, partnerships, innovation, creativity, storytelling is possible.
You know, I was just at, thank you. I appreciate that. And I was just at a conference not too long ago. It's called Rediscovering Hawaii Soul, and I had a chance to be able to sit down with some of the larger...
Is that the Hawaii Executive Collaborative?
Yeah.
Yes, because it's one of the four pillars now.
Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely. And so I was sitting down with some of the like larger CEOs and vice presidents, mm-hmm. of some of the larger people on Bishop Street here, and I was just explaining to them that, you know, as we look at culture or resurgence of culture, and then even the regeneration of culture in the proper way, there are still profit models and profit structures that fit within these cultural models as well. And I think that when we're looking at what we are investing our time and money into, we need to figure out, one, how do we invest back into these integral cultural models? Because what that will do is it'll diversify our product, and it'll also create this moat of sorts, because then that Hawaii product that we'll have will stand its on its own as compared to any other tourist destination out there, because we actually put money and invested into this cultural almost uniqueness of Hawaii. And then that way, when people come and witness our product, then that product is only available here in Hawaii. And so that's why I feel like there are ways to be able to yes, a balance for sure, but also figure out ways that it can actually cycle through industry and into culture and back into industry. And so I think that there's ways to do it, but I think the framework definitely has to be grounded in Ike Hawaii or into our ancestral lenses.
Yeah. I love that too. And I'm glad that you're part of that conversation and that talk story. And I love that you use the analogy of moat. I use medieval analogies all the time. Fiefdom, moat.
You know, that's a business. It's a business
jousting
term. Sorry.
No, I love that though. You know, you reminded me of something that Ed Schultz at Hawaiian Host Group said, right? He's not from here. But again, to reinvent Hawaiian Host for the future, it's how do we create this unique value, create a moat, as you said, mm-hmm. to justify the higher price of products that do come from Hawaii, right? Because there's that intangible portion. It's not just the MacNut, but yep. It's the chocolate covered MacNut from Hawaiian Host from Hawaii. So I really appreciate you being a part of that voice. Save our soul, please. Okay, so let's talk about your lineage, which frankly, I'm very, very, you know, envious of. So it's too long to go all the way back.
You should be careful. There's a lot of weight on the shoulders.
Okay. So we all know that your father is the internationally renowned clothing designer and artist. I would just say artist, Zigzane. Your mother is Nalani Kanaka Ole. hope I said that correctly. Perfect. The renowned cultural practitioner and kumuhula, and only just one figure from one generation before that, of course there's many, is your maternal grandmother, Edith Kanaka'ole, who I read was designated a living treasure of Hawaii in 1979, which is actually the year that she passed.
Yeah.
And actually, getting back to the regenerative tourism, when I was doing research on that, there's a foundation, the Edith Kanaka'ole Foundation.
Correct.
And they were instrumental in partnering with others in this idea of regenerative tourism and the Pohoiki Beach.
Yep.
It's a black sand beach,
totally.
Right?
Yep.
In Big Island. So that's another example,
yep,
of using, going backwards into the legacy and the history and then going forward.
Correct.
So there's a balance.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So I read that you have a long hula practice history, and it reminded me of the second interview that I had with Diane Paloma.
Yeah.
And she said, hula is something to the effect of like, hula is not what I do. Hula is life. And so when I was reading up about you, I got this, oh God, it's deeper than hula is life. Like hula is like oxygen, like blood, like it's just in you. And so I want to ask you to talk to me about your hula and more importantly, your ups and downs with hula and what it means to you today and how you honor hula in the work that you do.
You know, I would say probably the business that makes the most off of hula, off of me, would be Hawaiian Airlines, because I still practice every Monday and Wednesday. So mm-hmm. No matter if today's Tuesday right now, so no matter if I have some, you know, meeting today, I'm always flying back and forth because...
Oh, you're saying if you're on Oahu on Monday or Wednesday, you're flying home...
I'm flying home.
...to dance hula.
Yeah. So I won't stay over, even if I have another meeting the next day. So I won't stay
You'll
over.
You'll come back
I'll fly
the next
back.
Morning.
Correct.
Wow, that's awesome.
So you're welcome, Hawaiian Airlines. But no, I think, yes, as far as...
They should
as,
at least give you free juice at this point, right?
You know, maybe...
That would be nice.
Maybe a white wine
okay.
here and there.
okay.
No, I think that... I think that's a great question. And I love how Diane kind of said that hula is life too, because I definitely feel the same. And I think that beyond what it has given me as cultural practice, it's also given me these pillars of perspective. And that's basically how I see the world currently. And I think that now I'm trying to figure out, okay, when you're looking at business from a Western perspective, that's cool. We'll keep that there. But when you're looking at, not necessarily business, but when you're looking at reciprocity in a Hawaiian perspective, and especially more importantly in a hula e ha'a or hula perspective, how does that work in a reciprocal manner? And then you look and you go back to the business and you try to figure out, okay, how do you integrate this into these ways? Or how do you transform that Western perspective of business, but use these kind of like Hawaiian perspectives of reciprocity in that same way? Because when you look at it, you know, currency or, you know, money, it can be used as a tangible form of reciprocity. And so how are we using these Hawaiian perspectives of reciprocity to be able to transform the Western context? And that's kind of like where I'm at currently. I will say Shelly Kimura, who's she's currently CEO of Hawaiian Electric, she also danced hula. She danced hula for 20 years, and she was at this other conference that I was talking story with her. And she basically said that hula gave her these intangible knowledge bases that no other business school has ever given her,
mm-hmm.
and that she still employs on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at it in that manner, it's almost as if, yeah, you can say, oh, that guy danced hula. But what if I named my hula as a MBA?
Mm-hmm.
Or I named my hula as a PhD because mm-hmm. I've been dancing for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I named it as an MBA, then it should hold validity just as much as any other Western MBA out
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And that said, now if you're doing business in Hawaii...
And some would argue stickier.
Yeah, well, you know, people can have their opinions. But I would say that if hula is integrally Hawaii and you were able to get an MBA in hula, which is integrally Hawaii, then if you're to do business in Hawaii, wouldn't you have to have some sort of background or understanding of what is this integral Hawaii? And so I think that where we're going in the future is hopefully with Ida Kanaka'ole Foundation and some of the programs that we're creating for that, ideally what we want to do is we want to create these introductory programs or even advanced programs that can really give you an insight on what is Hawaii and what is Ike Hawaii or Insights of Hawaii, and how can that educate everyone that's here in the islands, and how can they adopt the cultural practice, as well as how can they enhance their career as a business person. And so I think it's this way of being able to move forward, but using these pillar sets that Hula has kind of passed on to me. Sorry, that's a really long answer.
No. I hear you. I mean, I was staring at you because I totally agree. Let me share. So when I was in elementary school, my parents gave me a choice between piano and Korean folk dancing.
Which one did you choose?
Of course, Korean folk dancing. Come on. Costumes, makeup. So there were several years where I did that. And again, this is a 1/100th of a version of your hula story. Okay. Yep. So if I felt this way about my dance time, I can only imagine what it means for you. So commitment, sacrifice, pushing through, learning new things, working as an individual, working as a team. There was one time I got on stage, I was doing a drum dance, and I totally blanked. And it was horrifying, but I had to finish it.
I know the feeling.
But I had to finish the dance. I don't know what I did, but I did something, and I finished it. And it wasn't the dance that I had rehearsed, right? We went, as a troop, we went on Korean TV. It was when I was a military brat, and we lived in Korea.
There's no video of this, right?
There's a picture, I'll show you after. my troop and I, it's a bridal dance. So we were all girls, but some of us were the grooms and some of us were the brides. And then we went on this like TV show and we did really well. But that's not the point. But the point is, what I carry with me today, when I think back to all those years, I can only imagine how you and Diane and Shelley feel about hula when I think about how I feel about that time in my life. Yep. And you know, I went to practice every day after school, fourth, fifth, sixth grader, right? So you don't go play. Mm-hmm. And ups, downs, the teacher was really mean.
Strict.
But tough love, yes. Yeah. I mean, she would make us do like moving squats if we didn't listen, right? Like bunny hops. Yeah. Oh, geez. So all those things, right?
And then should come dance.
So I just remember, and then the belonging with my sisters, and I can only imagine. But what I also love about when I listen to you and Diane and Shelley talk about your hula is I wonder if our audience can translate that to what is their hula? And this is what I mean. I worry about people whose only important thing in life is their work. Mm-hmm. And you hear about people who retire or who go through career transitions and they get into real mental and emotional trouble because their only identity is their title. So when you're no longer the senior VP or the CEO or whatever, who are you?
Yeah.
Right? But when you have a hula or something that is bigger than yourself and that you belong to, whether that's golf or cooking or jewelry making, it doesn't really matter, right? I think it's important to have this identity of your own that's outside of work.
Correct. And you know, I'd love to be a cook later on in life. That's like my dream. dream job. But I don't think I'm cut out for that. Anyway, I think that that's really important to be able to have these larger identities for yourself that can connect you to, you know, the larger cause of what you're trying to work towards. And I definitely think that my mom, Nalani, as well as my auntie Pua, they have definitely modeled that for me. Because even for Auntie Pua, who's 85 now, she still has this like fervor to be able to identify or learn more about our culture within these chants. And these chants are like, you know, this is like Vedic texts, you know, like in yoga how they have mantras. This is the same thing that we have. It's our text that is generations old but also has so much wisdom that is built in double and triple entendres within each line of these chants that we have. And so I think for her, for you know, the past 80 something years that she's been dancing and translating these chants, she's slowly starting to like undo some of these double entendres, and it's being revealed to her. And so one of the biggest things, as you said about Yeknakole Foundation, I was voluntold so happily. I was voluntold by Auntie Pua so happily to be the next board president. So I'm currently
wonderful.
Board.
Oh, wonderful! So that's awesome.
I'm there currently. Yeah. And there's a bunch of initiatives that me and my cousin Luca that we're working on. But anyway, one big thing that she identified in her time is that in the Kumulipo, which is the creation chant, it's a 2,000 line chant that we have in Hawaii's history. And it documents everything from the creation of darkness and slime all the way through to human. And it's an amazing chant. It like goes down through so many different creations. But there is lines, I want to say like 1742, I believe the line starts, but there's three lines that only have three words in it: Papuhulilani, Papuhulihonua, and Papahanaumoku. And all of the other lines have multiple sentences or longer sentences, but there's only three lines in a 2,000 line chant that only has these three lines, mm-hmm. only these three words to it. And she's just been pondering about it over her lifetime. And I think it was maybe 2009, I believe, she put on a workshop called Papuku Makavalu. And she brought in different kupuna or different elders from different cultural practices and brought them all together. And she presented what her thesis was on yeah. these three lines.
Yeah.
But basically, Papuhulilani is all things that happen in the sky. Papuhulihonua is all things that happen on the earth. And then Papahanaumoku is all things that give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she realized in that epiphany is that these three lines aren't just lines of a chant. These three lines are actually nomenclature categories of how we view our world.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened at that moment is that we started to transition our chants as these folklore of these goddesses and gods and all of that.
Mm.
Then we started to translate these chants as in-depth observational scientific data of our place of Hawaii.
Mm.
So taking it all the way back, when you dance hula, when you're a fisherman, when you weave lohala or whatever your cultural practice is, I think the essential portion of that is you're building a connectivity or you're building a relationship to your environment.
Yeah.
And all of this text that we have now that we're starting to translate is almost like the blueprint of what has happened in the past. And so it can help us and almost like nourish us with knowledge of how we move forward. And that's a cool part about it. And so I would say to that CEO that it's about to, you know, end his career and he's, you know, about to retire, I think that there is still a lot of relationship to be had with the environment. And maybe some of that language between you and the environment can actually be enhanced by Hawaiian culture.
I'm not even going to respond further because that was beautiful. So with that, let's take a short break.
Definitely.
And hear from our presenting sponsor, Surf Co. And when we come back, let's talk story
about... Thank you for my Sequoia Surf Co. It's a beautiful one.
That's awesome plug. And when we get back, we're going to talk story about Sig Zane Designs, how you didn't want to be part of the family business, but now you are, taking the next level and all the exciting things ahead.
Awesome.
Today's episode is presented by Toyota Hawaii. With over 10 alternative fuel vehicles to choose from, their lineup of electrified vehicles continues to grow. Toyota Hawaii provides feasible options towards sustainability with the same reliability and customer service you know and love. Toyota Hawaii knows there are diverse needs and choosing your vehicle isn't a one-solution-fits-all answer. Their goal is to provide you with a variety of convenient and green options for your lifestyle. Discover an impressive balance of efficiency and power, whichever powertrain you choose. Whether you want to save money at the pump or take steps to go greener, Toyota Hawaii's electrified lineup gives you options in powertrain and models to best fit your needs. Whichever choice you make, reliability is something you can count on. For more information, visit toyotahawaii.com/electrified. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're talking story with Kuha'o Zane, COO and Creative Director of Sig Zane Designs. Okay, so let's talk about Sig Zane Designs. So you you said, my dad's Chinese. I was always working, but always for free, right?
Exactly.
So you went on payroll officially in 2003, and you told me that you... Like many family business, second generation, third generation children, you did not want to join the family business. You absolutely did not want to join retail. You said because you didn't want to fold clothes.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of coconut buttons on our clothes. I can't even count the amount of coconut buttons that I've actually buttoned. Anyway, yes, I definitely did not want to get into it. And I think that in high school, ideally, I wanted to just do design work. And luckily, Punavai Rice, which was my dad's partner at the time, he actually taught me how to do Corel Draw, which is like, wait, I'm kind of...
Corel?
I'm dating myself.
Whoa,
I'm dating myself. Anyway, he taught me how to do Corel Draw. And I think at that time, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to come up with my own t-shirt brand. And so that's when I first started to do design work. But at that time, I definitely had no intent whatsoever to be able to be a part of my dad's business at all.
Yeah. Well, you were actually quite successful during high school. Your parents always encourage your creativity, which makes sense because they were creative beings, mm-hmm. right? Surf shop, graphic design, as you just said, quite successful, t-shirts and logos. And you took actually a year off after high school. And what happened from there? I think you saw one poster.
Yeah, I would like to say, I wouldn't say a year off. I would like to say that maybe it's because I wasn't accepted or I didn't have the credentials to be accepted anywhere. So it was more of a year figuring out what I was going to do.
So but you're off.
Yeah,
you're
I was off.
Okay,
nothingness.
Okay. Yes.
But I was still doing freelance work. So I was still doing design work. And I think that at the time I wanted to try and figure out what I was going to do, of course. And doing the design work was awesome. And I was still selling t-shirts. It's between me and Ramona, who was the Musubi girl. She would sell Musubis in high school.
Oh, I thought Musubi girl was her nickname. Like legit, she was selling Musubis. It's like, you get a t-shirt and a Musubi.
Well, no. Well, she sold Musubis, but as competition of what you would spend your money on during your school day.
Oh, okay.
It was either the Musubi girl or the t-shirt guy.
And yeah, so that's a hard choice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But, you know, she did good. She hustled.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would say that for me, doing design work was a way that I was able to kind of like integrate creativity as well as make a living. And so I was just trying to figure out what to do. And I went back to, it was my Distributive Education Clubs of America, DECA, as my DECA teacher. And Miss Nakamura, she's also a December baby.
Mm-hmm.
But she just told me, she's like, you know what, how about you come back and we'll talk story about what to do. And when I went back to her class, she had a poster up on the wall that just said, do you want to design shoes? Simple as that. And so I ripped off the little thing. I had to actually fill it out.
Wait, like the fringe, like old school poster with the fringe
on the
bottom?
Yeah, you know that little thing at the bottom?
Yeah.
There was no like
QR
code. Yeah, so I ripped it off and I put my little email address and I put it into the mail. And I got a call maybe like a week later. And it was one of the scouts for the school, and they basically gave me a call and said, hey, you know, I saw that you're interested and we want to continue that conversation. Is there something that you want to go into? And I said, fashion design. And I think that's just where my head was at the time. But they said, oh, well, send over your grades, send over whatever credentials you have. And then they said, you know, based off of your grades, Mr. Zane, I don't think we can accept you into the school.
Ouch.
Probably your last chance is that you have to do an personal interview with, it was the head of that department at the time. And basically I had my portfolio and I did a phone call. She had her, I sent it over to her. Mm-hmm. There's no Zoom at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent it over to her and I just talked through page by page what part of it was. But I think the thing that she was impressed with the most was that none of it was just portfolio. It was all actual work that I've done previously.
Mm.
And so it was t-shirts that have been printed. It was pictures that I took of some of my friends. Mm-hmm. And it was some of the logo jobs that I've done. And so she was really impressed that I already did all of this design
work. As a high schooler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was like, okay, you know what? We're going to overlook your grades.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come here, you have to still do some of your like English and math. And so anyway, I got accepted into design school. And I ended up talking to the scout, Edgar. And he said, you know what? I don't think you should go into fashion. And at the time, identity-wise, I was like, fashion. He said, I think you should go into graphic design. I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't even know like what graphic design was, or I didn't understand the concept of it. But looking in hindsight, that one piece of feedback that he gave me probably led me into an arena that allowed my creativity to flourish in so many more mediums. Rather
right,
than
just fashion. Right.
And I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't even have made it out of the school if I went into fashion. So I think that graphic design was really more of a tool.
Oh, I love that.
For my creativity.
I love that. Yeah. Whether it's an office, a building, furniture, clothes, shoes, hat, jewelry, yep. Doesn't matter. Sidewalk, right?
You mentioned some new industries that we're getting into.
No, oh, okay. Oh, that's so cool. Okay, so you graduate from, you know, the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in LA, but in graphic design, and you move back, you get on payroll, and you told me your dad said, "Eh, I paid for your college. Come back and repay me."
Exactly. Exactly. Probably verbatim too. Yeah, he definitely felt that. You know, now that I've kind of met some other generational businesses and see what their practices are, that, you know, sometimes the son of the company, or if you're related to the family, you have to go out into another business and you have to make it all the way to C-suit before you can actually come back. So I'm keeping that in mind for future generations. But and this time my dad was like, "No, you need to come back ASAP now."
Yeah.
And so I came back. But at the time I thought I was going to be like, I mean, I thought of myself as a pretty, you know, I was one of the better designers in Hawaii. And so when I told my dad, I was like, "Hey, Dad, I'm ready. I'm going to come back and do design work." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, that's perfect. You know, you're going to start in the store. Actually, you're going to start in a stockroom."
That's awesome.
And so
That's awesome.
Literally worked my
dishwasher.
Way
out. You're the dishwasher.
I think I did like about 2 years or 3 years without even touching any design work during the day.
Yeah.
But the cool thing of what that did is I was still fired up and so passionate about design, about typography, about communication, that I would go home at night and I would design at night. And what that created was a kind of like a habit of me now working at nighttime. And so now, even today, right around like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, just because.
Are you a natural night person?
I'm a natural night person.
I get a jolt at 9 p.m. as well.
Yeah,
and then I'm up till like 1 p.m.
Yeah,
yeah, and I'm like doing things.
I gotta go sleep by 12 now.
I know.
I have to
force myself
to go to sleep. But yeah, so now I actually built a habit of me trying to do creative work at nighttime too. And so I appreciate my dad.
Your dad wanted you to really earn your stripes and touch all parts of the business, right?
Yeah.
Understand the entire flywheel.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Definitely.
Right. And he likely wanted you to earn everyone's respect.
I think maybe he saw the ego was too big. He was like, "No, get down there, fold some clothes.
There's no hat that fits him."
Yeah, exactly. So he was like, "You know what? Calm down."
Okay. So, you know, first gen and second generation, what's the relationship now? Is your dad still involved full time, or where are the focus areas? Where are the priorities? What are the lanes that you and your dad occupy?
So this might be the first time that I'm mentioning this.
Okay.
But I am currently in transition to be able to take the CEO role.
Oh, wonderful.
And I've also hired a few from within too, to be able to take my position of
wonderful
chief of operations. And so hopefully I'll be transitioning to that point by January.
Yes.
And then any week now, my dad's new title will be babysitter.
Wait, no, actually you forgot free babysitter.
Free babysitter.
Free,
yeah, I'm getting him back.
Remember,
I like that. Yeah.
Say, "Eh, I grew the business. It's time to repay me."
Exactly. Exactly. I love that. I'm gonna remember that.
That is so awesome. I just love so many parts of that. And you know, you, first of all, congratulations.
Thank
and you.
You
shared that with us, but one can only imagine all the work, the love, the healthy conflict, the conversations, the planning, two steps back, five steps forward, one step left that took to create that transition that you just shared with us.
Yeah, and I'm appreciative of the journey, considering that I started in 2003, so I did get to see at least one recession. And so I think that for me, being able to,
and don't forget the pandemic.
Oh, and the pandemic, of course. But yeah, we're still dealing with that. But I think for me to be able to implement some of those insights now, as well as trying to integrate a lot of these cultural pillar points, and I think even more so, answering the question of what is a Hawaiian business, what is a Kanaka business, and I think that those are terms that are always on polar opposite sides. But for me, I think that I've been given a certain amount of tool sets that can at least start to answer those questions.
Right.
So when you look at it from an HR position, what are these values that, you know, everybody has these values as we were talking about, and everyone has these values, but what do these values actually look like from a Hawaiian perspective, and where do they derive from? And so I've been working on this HR document at least for about 5 years now, and we created an HR document that derives all of these cultural values from cultural practices.
Yeah. And what are you going to do with this document?
Well, now, what we just actually did this past week is we created a 360 review system based off these cultural values.
Mm-hmm. Is it just for SIGSE Designs?
Great question.
Because you see my eyes, right? You see where I'm going with this. This is, it's funny. It's like, and it's the landscape, the market, the timing, I think is so right. And I don't want to put more weight on your shoulders, but we all need this.
Yeah, and I think that you can email me at I think that that's the work that I think SC Kyle, and that's our design studio site, SC Kyle, SC to, you know, pay homage to the guy that still pays the bills. And then Kyle is actually the name of that time in the morning just before the sun peaks over the sunrise and the beams of the sun start to like shoot out.
Oh, I love that. Actually, I was going to ask you about that later. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was actually my grandma's favorite time on my mom's side. That's my grandma's favorite time to create her compositions or create choreography because she felt that all of these ideas were crisp in the air at the time. Anyway, so it's an homage to her. But SC Kyle as a studio, as a creative studio, those are the kind of things that we want to create. So lately, my favorite product hasn't even been a design. My favorite product actually has been our cultural value review system that we created within SIGSE Designs. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I think that there's no bound, there's a bound to create, there's boundaries to creative work. But when you're looking at how cultural pillars can be integrated or cultural pillars can serve as a foundation, mm-hmm. I don't feel that there's any bound to that growth.
There isn't. And I'm so excited about this. So, you know, so your parents, whole, they toiled, right? And they stood up this.
I made them toil.
They stood up many things, not just SIGSE Designs, mm-hmm. right? It's not the only thing they've stood up, right? But since you've come on, you and your father, you know, you have three shops now, two in Hilo, one in Oahu. You have an art gallery in Chinatown on Oahu. Obviously, you have your e-commerce. You have your corporate partnerships, which I'm hoping we can, you know, talk a little bit about. And then you have your SIGSE Kyao. I'm not going to say it correctly.
Kyle.
Okay. Yep. They're your spinoff studio. So is this a window into what we can expect going forward as you assume the CEO position?
Definitely.
More of this?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, while we were on the, while I was on the plane today, I was just talking to Hoku, who works with me, but I was just saying, like, you know, I don't think I've actually mapped out all of the projects that I have my hands in. Mm-hmm. And I used to do it before when I do all of my design projects, I'd list out all the projects. But now it's almost as if it's grown a lot longer or a lot wider in breadth. And so I think I need to map these out. So I literally just did it. And there's a few more projects at hand that are going to be kind of feeding into the same structure.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like, and I hope that you continue to give of your time and your energy there, is that we can expect you to be an important voice in helping others, nonprofit, for-profit, everybody in between, just be better, be stronger from the inside out, understand things a little bit more, be more connected to the community, to the people, to the land. You can be a mainland company, come here and still show up authentically mm-hmm. with humility, right?
We'll have that prescription for you.
Yeah. And you still get the Mai Tai with the umbrella in it.
Well, you know,
still get to enjoy that.
I was listening to Mark Fukunaga's one, and he was saying whiskey in his one. So, you know, whiskey's definitely there.
Whiskey and ribeye. That's what I think all attorneys are eating and drinking.
That's awesome. Right. I will say currently my thing is Three Tres Tequila. And I don't mean to throw a brand out there, but Three Tres Tequila, the Blanco, little bit rocks, amazing.
I'm really into Suntory Rokkaku Gin.
Oh, I have.
Delicious, right?
I've seen the bottle.
Yes.
Okay. Now with your sign off, I'm going to have to try
that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about your partnership, your corporate partnerships, right? And there's way too many to name. So, you know, with the hotels and Hawaiian Airlines, but, you know, Surfco's our presenting sponsors. So mm-hmm. I want to ask you about your partnership with Surfco, but more importantly, how it happens, because it's not like everybody is going to knock on your door and you're going, yes, sure, uh-huh, yeah, tomorrow, Monday, whatever. So what are the ingredients?
I'll get back to you.
Yeah. What are the ingredients for a successful corporate partnership? And what I'm hoping is that people listening can take inspiration from that, whether, again, whether you're for profit, whether you're a consultant like me, whether you're a nonprofit or something in between, I want us to have more collaborations. You know, everybody do what they're good at, come together. So tell me, what are the ingredients and what's the processes for how you've done it so successfully?
That's a beautiful question, and I'm trying to figure out how to answer it as beautifully.
Is it the drink that they buy you?
That always helps. But I think, you know, and there's been only a few jobs here and there that we've actually haven't taken on. And I think that also since we work in the realm of influence, you know, you only come to our shop if you want to buy something. And so if you want to work with us, that means you're already willing to work with us. You're not required to work with us or any other. So I think that it leads to great relationships over the years, and Servco definitely has been one of them. But maybe I'll just share this story. So there's this print that we have, Uluvehi Keokaha, and it's a print that of an ulu tree that was given to me on my first birthday, and it's planted in my yard. I literally still rake it today, but rake the leaves today, and my umbilical cord is planted under the tree, and it's kind of a traditional practice for to give a child an ulu tree, or a tree that can feed that child for the rest of his life. And so, one, it's an amazing tree, and two, it became an amazing design over the years. But this guy walks into the store. I'm downstairs working in the shop. Guy walks into the store, and he's wearing one of the prints, Uluve Kilka. And so, you know, me being half pake, I'm over here. I'm like, make a sale. Anyway, so I walk over and I'm like, hey, how's it going? Wow, that shirt looks great on you. Do you know the story behind the shirt? And he paused for a little bit. He's like, I do know this story. This shirt is called Uluvehi Keokaha, and it talks about a ulu tree and Sig and his son. And I was like,
whoa.
It's like, whoa, did this guy memorize this story? That's awkward. Anyway, he memorized the story. Obviously, he didn't know who he was talking to. So I just kept going with him. And he told me the whole story about the umbilical cord and everything. So I was like, oh, okay, that's great. Wow, I love the fact that you know that story. Well, you let me know if you need any more help. I was just floored, you know? Mm-hmm. He came back to me a little bit later. And he's like, oh, I forgot to tell you one thing. I just had a son, and I gave him an ulu tree, and I planted his umbilical cord underneath it. And I was like,
okay, like my eyes are welling up.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Okay.
So I was sitting in the store, and I was like,
yeah, wow.
So what I realized is that if we can put our artwork out there into the world, no matter what the medium is, with the right narrative, the right value, and the right concept, collaborations, we're able to build a regard and respect for Hawaii, as well as its people, as well as its cultural practices, through our artwork. So I will say this: the right type of partner that we are looking for is people that are trying to enhance their connectivity to the environment, or enhance their connectivity to the land that they inhabit.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So what I'm hearing is, because not everybody listening is going to be in the same shoes as you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, let's make it sticky. It's kind of like friendships, relationships, partners. You know, it's the same, as simple as it sounds, it's the same tenets. You know, shared goals, shared values, mm-hmm. shared standards, shared, you know, conflict resolution types. So if you have that, whether you're, you know, a smoothie maker and you work at the airport, if you decide to collaborate, if you have those shared values and standards, there's something there, or there could be something there.
Yeah.
So for you, you're not targeting, or you're not manifesting any particular industry or person. It's really about energy and values, and what can we co-create together?
Correct, correct. Because I think that at the end of the day, each of these businesses, whoever these people are that have their own industries, I think that the messaging is what's important. And mm-hmm. so if we can create that collaborative project or that collaborative product that can speak to their audience, then even more so, that's going to bring more value and more connectivity to the land that we have here in Hawaii. And so if we're here in Nu'uanu Valley, like, do you know the top of the mountain point at the top of Nuuanu Valley, which is Lanihuli? Or do you know the name of the bay, which is Mamala Bay? Or do you know the Kukalhali rain that comes through this area? If you can know each of these environmental elements by name, then I feel that you would strengthen your relationship with them. And more so, you would make sure that your business practices don't deteriorate that relationship with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Oh, okay, with that, I'm going to ask you my last question that I always ask everybody. Yeah. But I feel like at this point, everyone's like preparing. So kind of no fun.
Oh, okay. I have no idea what question you're going to ask.
Excellent. So what is your superpower and why?
Oh.
Well, actually, what would be a superpower that you would want and why? Because obviously you get plenty of superpowers now. But what would you want in this magical world?
Okay, so it's a little bit cheat, but they actually make this deck called What is Your Superpower? And it's specifically built to build teams. And so everybody reads different.
Oh, I might need to get that.
Yeah, I'll send you a link for it. But it basically, you read the problem and you're like, is this what you would be called in for? And so I gave it to my team and there's different answers to it on it. But when I got mine, I flipped mine over and mine said visionary. And, you know, obviously, that's way too large of a term. Like, I'm far from perfect. I need to do so much more work. But I was surprised that's what was on the other side. So ideally, I want to keep working towards that, or even come to half, you know, 50% of what that term visionary is. That's kind of crazy to me. But I will say, my cousin Ely, who went to Rhode Island School of Design, and she's one of my, I literally grew up with her, but she's one of like the design nerds within my little community in Hilo. But my cousin Ely told me one thing. She was like, you know what you are? You're resourceful. You could just have like a couple things on your hand and 15 minutes and you got to come out with something, and you'll always come out with something. And so I would like to shout out to Ely. And then the other thing I'd like to shout out is to MacGyver, the TV show of obviously that's dating us. But to the MacGyver TV show, let's try and save the world on a paperclip budget.
Yeah, you're Mr. MacGyver.
Yeah.
Mr. MacGyver.
Resourcefulness.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for a talk story today.
Thank you.
I really, really enjoyed it. And
it was super fun.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the upcoming baby to you and your girlfriend.
Thank you.
And also, I, on behalf of everybody, look forward to your father's next season, and also you
title.
Taking on to CEO and all the, I don't want to say exciting, all the meaningful things to come.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time.
You've been listening to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Surfco Pacific. All episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, and of course at hawaiibusiness.com. If you enjoyed today's interview, go to your podcast platform of choice and hit the subscribe button, and also leave us a review. Positive reviews encourage others to tune in as well, and that raises the tide of meaningful conversation towards solutions in Hawaii. I'm your host, Anyang Nakata. Thank you for joining us today. Be safe, be well, and see you next time.